Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Let's go straight to our callers because they're out in force today, and it's about vaccinations again, and this story on the front of the Irish Daily Mail about the private school in South Dublin, St. Gerard's. 20 of the staff have already been vaccinated, even though they're way down. It's in Bray, actually, even though they're way down the list. Let me begin. Nuala, you represent one element of our callers, and that is people who are just simply angry, and they have a reason to be angry. Go ahead, Nuala.
That's right, Joe. I'm absolutely fuming that the Beacon, a private company, can decide to give the vaccinations to whoever they think they can give it, ignoring the government list. I'm sure there's plenty of schools and, you know, oncology patients nearer than County Wicklow that those vaccinations could have been given to.
And what's your situation?
Myself and my husband are foster carers for the past 17 years.
Okay.
Now, I've been on to my social worker, team leader, principal social worker, area manager, HICWA, the Irish Foster Society, and I can't get a vaccination for myself and my husband. We have four children here, all school-going age, from the ages from 18 down to 12, so they're in primary and secondary school. Right? We haven't been allowed, we couldn't let the two of them go back to school 2 weeks ago at the risk of them bringing us home COVID to the house.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
You know, it is, and it's huge, and people are saying, the government are saying it's not in schools. It is in schools. I know for a fact two schools in my area that there's been cases of COVID and it's been brought home to the household.
So you're saying to liberate your children and let them back to school, you would need the vaccine because the two of you have underlying conditions.
Exactly. And also it's for their sake. They need to get back out.
I know,
they're
I understand
anxious
that.
And worried.
And what,
you know,
reaction what reaction have you got?
Basically, I was told, no, there's nowhere. And we are carers. We should fall under the carers.
I know that, yeah.
You know, so, but we've been told, no, there's nowhere in the pipeline is it that foster carers are going to get the vaccination anytime soon.
Now, the earlier report, say there, Nuala, 51551, yeah. Joe at RT.ie, the earlier report said, this is what I heard now, and I'm reading it again, the hospital said there were more than 200 no-shows. Now, that I immediately thought, my God, there's people not bothering to go and get their vaccination. But Maxine is there on 1850 715 815. Maxine, you can explain what the no-show, how this happened, because you're one of them, effectively, in the other direction. Go ahead, Maxine.
Hiya, Joe. So I'm a psychotherapist, so I'm considered 2F healthcare worker.
Okay.
So I got my text on Saturday to say to go to the Beacon on Tuesday. I was delighted. No, sorry, I got a text on Sunday.
Okay.
And so it's like an automated text, and you just have to reply either yes to confirm or to text another number if you want to cancel it.
Okay, simple, yeah.
Very simple.
And
so,
were you given a time on in the Beacon, Maxine?
Yeah, so I was given 12 o'clock in the
Okay,
Beacon.
Great. And you were given, 24 hours notice?
Yeah.
Which is enough, yeah.
Yeah, so I texted yes, but then the day after that I got another text to say that my appointment was actually 12:45 in the Aviva.
Okay.
So I didn't know what to do because I thought, well, if I cancel that, does that mean I'm going to be cancelled off everything?
Yeah.
And then I'm not on the list at all. And unfortunately, there was other people like me you know, I just on a Facebook group for other psychotherapists, and there was another few people who had the same two messages. So we were trying frantically to get in contact with the HSE.
Okay.
With
and
somebody.
There's no other. When you get this message, you get this text about your vaccination.
Yeah.
You can either confirm or cancel. That's all.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I tried,
you
to
can't.
Call
you in other words, you can't ask them a question. You can't type in saying, hang on, does this mean my other one is cancelled? I've just been moved location.
No.
Yeah. Okay, so what did you do?
Yeah, so we tried Googling numbers, see if there's anybody we can get in contact with. So in the end, what I did was I actually tweeted HSE Live.
Okay.
So it's not very private. So
you tagged them in a public tweet. Yeah, you have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, they eventually got back to me asked me to send, like I kind of tweeted them and then went to work. And then when I got home from back from work, I had a look at the phone and they said, can you send screenshots? So I did. And then it was the next day, Tuesday, which was the day of the vaccine, that they actually, they came back to me and they asked me for a whole lot of kind of private details, you know, which I did give them, but I was, felt strange giving those details to an anonymous Twitter handle. So, yeah, I gave them all the details, where I worked and all the rest of it, and I didn't hear anything else from them then. It was 1 o'clock, which was after the vaccine, that I they said they'd look into it.
And where did you get vaccinated?
So I decided I'd just go to the Beacon, and if I wasn't there, I'd run over, I'd like fly over in the car to the Aviva.
No, but my point is, so you got vaccinated in the Beacon.
I did.
But by you getting vaccinated in the Beacon, you're worried that you're down as a no-show for the Aviva.
Yeah.
But you're not. But you're not. That's nothing. When they said, now again the Beacon statement, I'd get it in full. But they said it was 200 no shows. But you weren't. You weren't a no show. You were given two separate appointments by the HSE, and you had no facility. You did your best. You went public by tagging a tweet to them.
Yeah.
So you went public. You couldn't get through. Couldn't get an answer. So, the vaccine is just, especially in Ireland now, it's just so precious. So precious. And we know how important it is. It's a gateway for so many people who don't have COVID, but it's a gateway for Nuala to let her children go back to school.
Yeah.
So you're down as a no-show for the Aviva. Did you get any response from the HSE?
As I said, at 1 o'clock, I just got a response from the Twitter thing to say, yeah, we'll look into it.
They didn't tell you where to go, but...
No, but sure, at that stage, I'd already gone to the Beacon and got my vaccine.
Yeah, okay.
And as soon as I got it, I pressed cancel on the other vaccine. But sure, I mean, that wouldn't have been enough notice, you know?
Yeah.
So okay, I'm not angry. I'm disappointed to think that there's a vaccine.
Well, that to me explains something that had not been properly explained so far. Maybe I didn't hear everything this morning, but and that is that you're not no shows. You weren't sitting at home on your deck drinking a pina colada, saying I don't believe in vaccines.
No.
You had said yes, but then you got a second appointment, and you had no facility to inquire, to ask questions, and you're worried that clicking and a cancellation would tell the system you don't want the vaccine, which is not what you did. Okay, so you're vaccinated, your vaccination, were you affected, for example, by the AstraZeneca debacle, the shutdown for the week?
Yeah, so I was actually supposed to get the vaccine the week before, but I was cancelled. Yeah.
Okay, Maxine, thanks indeed. James McGill, 51551 Marshalls. James, good afternoon. Yeah, the vaccine again. When were you due to get your vaccine, James?
Hi, Joe. I was originally meant to get my vaccine Monday of last week.
Okay.
I received a text message on Friday, similar to your last caller, with a date and time for Monday, yes or no. And then, obviously with the AstraZeneca mix-up, it was cancelled. And I'm yet to receive an update on an appointment.
And James, can I ask what cohort you're in?
I'm in cohort 4, so I'm recovering from lymphoma of the brain.
Okay. So you're that's a pretty serious cohort. That is pretty necessary, and the vaccine is pretty. So we were told one that the shutdown for a week of AstraZeneca wouldn't make any difference. Of course it would. Like if vaccines are so precious, what difference has it made to you? When are you due to get the AZ?
I don't know. There's been no update. I've spoken to my GP. She doesn't know. I've spoken to several other cancer patients who are supposed to receive the AstraZeneca. One has received their injection. The others are the same as myself with no update. So when you hear something like that today, I have no issue with vaccine going to waste or going to teachers.
Yeah.
It's the logistical mess that the HSE has made of the situation.
Yeah. By the way, do you live near the Beacon Hospital, by any chance?
Not too far. Oh, okay. I mean, closer. I'm in the same county.
Yeah, but
probably about 30 minutes.
Okay, you're closer.
I could be there in a half an hour.
Look at this way. You're closer to Sandyford than Bray is to Sandyford.
Yes, I am.
Okay, James.
And
now,
I find it very hard to believe that they couldn't find 20 people in a radius of Sandyford.
Well, in the radius of the elevator in the Beacon, you'd find 20 people.
Exactly.
James, Noodle was pointing out that the vaccine would liberate her children to go to school if she gets the vaccination. What gateway will the vaccine open for you?
Well, I'm waiting to go into the National Rehabilitation Hospital.
Okay.
And I will not be comfortable going into a facility without being vaccinated.
Yeah, I totally understand.
I managed to avoid it for a year and in hospital. I can't take that risk again.
I'm so sorry. You have lymphoma of the brain.
Is that I'm in recovery.
I'm good. That's good, because that's what I'm reading here. You left hospital in December, and you're all in favour, as you say, of use up the vaccine, but there must be a better way. This is just
causing so much
anger.
But when there's
a
level of nepotism thrown into play here.
Nepotism. It's not. Anne-Marie in Wicklow. Anne-Marie, Joe, stay with us, Jen. Joe at rt.ie. The school is saying, the school aren't saying anything. The hospital are saying there was 200 no-shows because people, we now discover, have been double booked. So it wasn't the fault of the no-shows. Let's be clear about that. The majority of vaccines were subsequently used for HSE staff who were directed at Beacon. And 20 leftover vaccines were then sent to the school was contacted, and they said, "Can you get 20 of your staff up here?" And they said, "Yes." Now, why are you so annoyed, Anne-Marie?
I'm really annoyed, Joe. I have a sister who's in her early 40s. She's a child, one child, and she has insulin dependent diabetes. She's got an insulin pump and a sensor pump attached to her abdomen.
Right.
She barely sleeps with alarms going every night. It's taken incredible measures to keep herself and my 80-year-old mum safe for the last year. We've been doing everything by the book. And we're desperate for her to get the vaccine, as she is desperate to get the vaccine. I mean, the data suggests diabetic patients have a very poor outcome. Yeah, they're looking at death or being impaired for the rest of their life. Significantly impaired for the rest of their life if they get it, right?
Mm.
So when we hear the story breaking this morning, I just feel utterly appalled that the HSE, I mean, we had a similar story in when the Master of the Coombe dished it out to a number of people in the hospital, relatives of staff, right?
Including his own relatives.
Including his own relatives, exactly.
Young people.
This is, first of all,
and students, students in the hospital,
student
nurses didn't get it.
High risk, vulnerable people, like my sister, like that gentleman you've just had on with the brain lymphoma. High risk, vulnerable people should be at the top of the list. The government has had ample time to set up a register. In America, they have an online register called Dr. B or Dumpster Vaccines. Anybody can sign up.
Okay.
And that prevents any vaccines being discarded and wasted, right? My sister is 20 minutes from the Beacon Clinic. We would have had her in the Beacon Clinic in 5 minutes for that vaccine if we'd known that that was available.
And you were saying, for her, it almost... No, we can't put it that way. But for her, it's such a life-important, life-enhancing vaccine given her under...
It's life or death.
Are literally significantly
impaired for the rest of her life if she gets it. And the stress that has on the family, trying to keep herself and my 8-year-old mum protected, I mean, it's huge.
Okay.
And the measures we've taken to keep them protected. But high risk, I find it incredible. That
now, the other element as well, Anne-Marie, is the hospital rings the school. The school could have said no. No, actually, we don't want to. We have a... Anyway, the school
said another minefield. But my message is to the government.
Or maybe individual teachers did say no. I'm not skipping the queue.
I can't comment because I don't know how the message was communicated to the teachers. But I certainly feel What the government is dragging its feet. It's completely taken a year to set up quarantine, as the whole country has been engulfed with variants. And now this register, why hasn't the register been
and
set
it's
up?
The vaccination, we're told, and all the evidence is from Israel, from the UK, from various other countries, that the vaccine is a lifesaver, literally a lifesaver. And that's absolutely why people are so, so upset when they hear that.
Oh, really upset. I've never rang a talk show in my life before, but I was utterly compelled to ring this morning.
Okay.
I just felt so terrible for all the high-risk people have to be prioritised. They have to be prioritised. And the register has to be set up that this does not happen again.
Okay, Anna Donovan. Thanks, Anne-Marie. Thanks, James McGill. Your point, please, Anna Donovan.
Hi, I got my vaccine this day 2 weeks ago.
Great.
And yesterday I got a text to invite me for another vaccine tomorrow. And it didn't give the option to cancel or reply. And it took me about an hour this morning to find the number to ring to cancel the appointment for tomorrow.
And was it for a second jab tomorrow?
No. First jab, I got 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Thanks, Anne. That's Anna Donovan. Okay. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Karen Boyle, it's a raffle for an Easter egg. What's the problem?
Hiya, Joe. No, I'm just ringing. It's not so much of a problem, but it's something that just keeps coming up with my kids in school. And it's not a voluntary contribution from the school. The Department of Education, they seem to be not giving enough money to the schools so that they rely on people's contributions to fund.
Okay.
A separate issue, but the problem is, so in this particular school, they aren't doing a voluntary contribution this year, so they rely on you paying for raffle tickets throughout the Easter break or their summer raffle or something like that type of thing. And so you'd pay €2 for how many lines, €5 for X amount of lines.
But Karen, they're not expecting the children to go door to door selling the tickets.
No.
Well,
so
I hope not.
No. What they do is they tell the children that they have to go home and basically get the money off your parents, because it's a very important cause, because the school doesn't have enough money. So go home and ask your parents for money. Now, €2 is only one line, but if you pay pay €5, you get 3 tickets. That means you have more of an opportunity to get the prize. Now, the big prize will be this huge Easter egg. There'll be different little prizes, but there's so many amount of prizes. So the kids come home to me.
If you're to pay for all the raffle tickets that they bring home, how much are they? €10? How much is it?
So I have 2 children, so I pay €10 for them. Now, when I paid the last time, I kind of got annoyed by it and I paid €2, and my child came home and he was so upset. He was like, "Mammy, it's all your fault, because I might have won. If I had given €5, I would have more chances. So this time, the next time now when the raffle comes up, you have to pay me €5. So the problem I have is that I feel like that children are being used in the school that the teachers are always forcing the kids to go
and
home.
How
to the
did
parents.
How your lad care your child came home and said, "Mammy, to you." But he's only embarrassed if other children knew he gave €2 and they might have given 10.
It's not a bit about embarrassing. It's about pressure. It's about me being pressurised into spending the more money. So the more I spend, so the more chances I have of winning money.
They're saying that to
children. So they're saying it to the children, and I have a problem with them, with schools. I'm just wondering, is it out there with other schools?
And are they saying specifically this is a fund for, we're going to buy 7 laptops?
No, I know. I actually, first of all, I don't really know. I don't find out really what it's for until, they might have a newsletter.
Look for a voluntary contribution separately?
This time, no. See, so it's kind of a new enough school. So when there was an old school, they had an awful lot of money put in to get the new school up and running. So it has a lot of good services, a lot of everything. But what I'm wondering is, the two things I have have a problem. If they did a voluntary contribution in one hand, I think that's fair enough. The children don't know how much you're putting into the school, and that's fine. But just to keep the kids out of it, because, so say for example, the Easter raffle has just finished, right? And my children came home; they didn't win the competition, right? There's four, like there's something like maybe 400 children in the, whatever in school. And I was saying to them on the way into school, I was saying, now look, guys, like, you know, there's so many people in school, you know, you're more than likely not going to win this raffle, you know. And like, I have my kid, like, he's bawling, crying in the back of the car. And I think, look, I'll tell you what, I light a candle. This is what I said to him. I'll go into the church and I'll light a candle for you to see for trying and, you know, for you to try and win, you know. But don't be sad, because there's so many other kids out there that aren't going to win.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, well, that's...
he says to me, Mammy, your candle didn't work. Okay. You know, but it's, you know, so like, somebody does win. Obviously, somebody does win, and somebody gets. You know, it's the whole thing. It's the whole thing of being in school, and I understand that. But I just feel it's just awful on the kids. You know, I really find I just find it very upset. They're very upset when they, like, it wasn't my two children that came out upset for not winning the prize. There's so many kids that are just awful upset, you know, from not winning. And then my second thing on it is that with the Department of Education not giving them enough money to schools, that's what we're hearing all the time. Mm-hmm. And I really don't understand that myself. I don't understand it, and I need to be educated on that part of it. But what I wonder is if nobody did this voluntary contribution, or if no fundraising was done by us as parents, would the education department have to step up for that? Like, you know, would they have to say, well, look, nobody's given this, so would the teachers then cry out to the department? Is it sort of nearly like, it kind of nearly seems like it's an allowed behaviour, you know?
But your point is you feel the children are being pressurised. There is
I do. No, okay. Yeah, I definitely feel. I feel like there's pressure definitely put on the kids, and then the pressure is put on the kids to come home and pressurise the parents to pay.
Okay.
And you see, so if you can either pay by hand, or you can either pay by an Aladdin system. So therefore, when the money comes up on the Aladdin system, and you don't pay it, it stays up to let you know you haven't paid it.
And I'm just looking at, like, is it five eggs for a fiver in Tesco?
Yeah, I mean, I could have said, that's what I say to them. I say to the kids, look, don't worry, I'll go in. As I said, I ended up going...
That's not a lost leader, don't know what is. Five eggs for a fiver. Okay, fiver Friday. Thanks, Karen. That's Karen Boyle. And kind regards to you and your family. Merrion Square, full of history, full of famous residents from Oscar Wilde to W.B. Yeats to Violet Gibson. She's in the news today, the woman that shot and nearly assassinated Benito Mussolini, nearly took the nose off him, and it had a terrible consequences. The poor woman, who was from 12 Merrion Square, she ended up in an asylum, and for the rest of her life unjustly. Jane McGarry. Jane, good afternoon. It's a story.
Good afternoon.
What house are we talking about on Merrion Square in Dublin, opposite the National Gallery?
Okay, so this relates to number 82.
Okay.
And in the 1960s, at some point, mid to late at least, there was a family there called the Lyons.
Okay.
And I had relatives living at number 28 at that time. And somehow or another, a big parcel, there are over 200 photographs and about 25 personal letters were put in, perhaps in the safekeeping of my mother-in-law or something like that. And I'm clearing out the place now, elsewhere where we live now, and came across this big A4 envelope with Martin Lyons photos, etc., written on the outside. It's a whole record of, you know, a life and a family, and I'm sure, even if Martin's not around, some relative would love to.
So just to be clear, you believe Martin Lyons or his family lived in 82 Merrion Square?
Yes.
Okay. The letters you found, the archive you found has photographs and handwritten letters, and they're addressed to 82 Merrion Square.
Exactly.
Obviously, yeah, so that's how they got there.
To Martin Lyons at 82 Merrion Square.
Okay. Now, how did they come into your possession, Jane?
Well, it's only conjecture now at this point, but okay. I would say they were left for safekeeping, or they were left behind when that family moved. And then, you know, perhaps my relative, who was at 28, took them in. And, you know, as they moved on, they didn't throw them out, presumably thinking that Martin Lyons or his relatives would be coming back for them.
And the one clue we have is a photograph, 1966, Nancy's Pillar was blown up in Dublin. Wasn't it a week or two before Patrick's Day or Easter, was it? And there's a photograph in it of 2, 4, 6 young men with the head of Nelson's, with the head of Nelson. And people wouldn't remember it, but there was a favourite song called Up Went Nelson by the Dubliners. And these group of lads, I think they were students in the NCAD, they robbed Nelson's head from the Corporation Yard in Clanbrassil Street, if my memory serves me, and they traipsed around with the head. The head made an appearance on the stage of the Olympia during a Dubliners concert. But I think the lads made a few bob, but I hope they did. But it actually, the head is now back. I saw it just before the lockdown. I saw it in my favourite library in Dublin, which is after the Pembroke, after Charles Vimal, which is Pierce Street, the Gilbert Library, where the head now resides. He's a great head. Now, you reckon Martin Lyons is one of those six lads?
He definitely is.
Definitely is. Okay. Yeah. So, do we know any of the other lads? Now, I don't want to impugn them. I have the photograph with Nelson's head. I'm not under any circumstances saying these boys took a head, so to speak. They didn't. They might have. Now, they look a bit.
I hadn't identified that's what it was.
And no, it's Nelson's head. Yeah.
Photos. You know, I picked that because if you had it, some friend might recognise themselves in it. Do you know what
I
mean?
No, I spotted it. When Fergus showed to me this morning, I reckon. Well, I believe that's my memory of it. It's the right size, it's the right shape. And as I say, the actual head, slightly reconfigured, is and rejuvenated, is in the Gilbert Library in Pierce Street. So does anyone know the five or six lads who stole Nelson's head? We believe one of them was a man. Sorry, we're not saying, not accusing them of theft. They borrowed the head for the laugh. It was one of the best student pranks ever. And
Joe, sorry to interrupt you, but that would tie in because a lot of photos are very artistic. They're developed, I presume, by Martin Lyons himself.
Okay.
You know, they're not from a local photographer or anything. They're all different shapes and sizes. And I had pinned him down as somebody artistic, so NCAD would tie in absolutely.
Okay. Now, my memory, and I was only 10 at the time, my memory is that when the head, I think it actually ended up at a window of an art gallery in London at once, because it'd be a substantial weight.
Yeah.
When the head was being carted round and put on display at charity events, and I think the six boys, if there was six, came out with hoods over their head, and the place used to go berserk when they came out as the Dubliners, as the Dubliners were singing Up Went Nelson in old Dublin, and the head appeared with the lads, I think, with their hoods on. The place went crazy.
Wow, yeah,
it was such a laugh. Okay, the main identifier, of course, is the address 82 Merrion Square, obviously, because that's where the letters came from. Is there any other identifiers in terms of people or places? Or,
well, most of those letters originate from one person, and mainly from France, but some of them from Brooklyn, one from Dublin, but all, you know, from the same person. I mean, it looks like Martin travelled around a bit. There's evidence of him inquiring at least whether he bought it or not, a vehicle from Germany. And then, you know, there are photos of bullfights, which could be south of France, given this fairly strong French connection. In, I haven't really opened many of the letters because they're so personal, but in one of them there is mention of his two sisters. Now, they're not named, but we now know he did have certainly two sisters.
It's an incredible square for. Have you? Is there a history to 82 in terms of, like Henry Grattan lived in Merrion Square? What's his name? We did it before. L. Ron Hubbard of this Church of Scientology found he lived in Merrion Square. That's where their office is now,
good
isn't
gracious.
It? Daniel O'Connell lived in Merrion Square. William Butler Yeats lived in Merrion Square. Oscar Wilde and his father, the incredible Sir William, writer, surgeon and general, all round good guy, Sir William Wilde, he lived in Merrion Square as well. It's an incredible. Oh, Sybil Connolly, Louise Kennedy, the designers.
Well,
it's incredible.
I looked up the name, but I never thought to look up the address.
Yeah.
So maybe there is a history to 82, but I mean, there's one photograph of him in a doorway that looks like it may well be Merrion Square, and it just looks like it's, you know, private house. Now, how long he was there, whether it was his whole family or not, I presume, you know, because of mention of sisters and so forth, that, you know, that perhaps they did live there for a while.
Okay, we'll try and find out.
But it's too much of a family archive to not to try to reunite
and,
it.
Okay, and you're determined to try and get it back to someone related to the Martin Lyons family, L-Y-O-N-S. Okay, it's really important. Have you moved out of house now?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
No. Well, I never lived in Merrion Square. Family members did.
Family members, okay.
And then this envelope probably travelled via Stillorgan and, you know, out further along the coast there, south of Dunleary. So it's done a bit of a journey, but obviously all the time that it was in the hands of my family members, they've obviously felt they had it for safekeeping, you know, and that somebody would be coming back to claim it.
Apparently, two of the Nelson Six, as we're calling them, two of them were twins, Ciarán and Brendan O'Connor. Not our Brendan O'Connor, obviously, but they were. That's two out of the six. So we're trying to find the Nelson Six at this stage. That's our only lead, and they might be able to help us lead us to Martin Lyons. We're following a number of lines of inquiry, Jane, and hopefully we'll answer, because I love these puzzles, I really do. And if anyone has a current photograph of Nelson's head in the Gilbert Library, they can tweet it to us and we'll let people see how magnificent it looks. Okay, thanks indeed, Jane McGatch. And Jane, are you into archives and searching in history and genealogy? Or
a little bit, you know, on a personal level. I just think that, you know, family history is so important, and, you know, we are our history. And, you know, if it was my archive, I'd want to have it.
Yeah,
or, you know, if it was my uncle or whatever, I'd want to know. And especially now with the connection that you've pointed out.
Yeah, I think so. Now, I don't want to go down the road saying these are lads who were photographed with the head of Nelson. And one of them is Martin Lyons. We've no evidence to suggest they did anything untoward, apart from one of them wear a very, very dodgy suede jacket. That's crimes against fashion. Okay, Jane McGarry, Guramila Mahogat, Martin Lyons, 82 Merrion Square. Anyone know of the family? I presume there's no relatives of Violet Gibson, who was in 12 Merrion Square, where the plaque is going, who shot Mussolini. There's no relatives of Violet still alive. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We tweeted that photograph on at Joe Liveline or at Joe at RTE Liveline. Ellen Armstrong. Ellen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Do you remember when Gay Byrne used to present the Late Late Show, Ellen?
The Late Late?
Yes.
I do.
Of course you do.
Yep.
Every now and again, he used to have a soapbox where someone would come on and they'd actually stand up on a lectern, like in a church or with a pulpit, and they would make an argument. They would put forward an argument for something controversial, so to speak, and Gay would give them, say, 3 minutes to make the speech to the nation. Okay?
Yeah.
So you're up on that pulpit.
I'm up on that pulpit.
Okay. Yeah. Your 3 minutes are starting from 5, 4, 3. Now.
From now.
Yes.
I think the government are doing everything upside down. First of all, they have the essential shops closed and they have the non-essential opened, right? And I ring Micheál Martin's office every day. They've got to know me. Gavin is one of the lovely men that listen to me. And I told them that they're on another planet. People are looking for clothes, babies, buggies, and everything like that, shoes. And they have all the liquor store open and they're wondering why people are partying and going into one another's houses. And now they don't want them to go down to their mobile homes. If they go down to their mobile homes, mm-hmm. they will be sitting outside in the air. Mm-hmm. A mobile home is quite small. They're paying for this. They sent the bill there last week for anyone that has a mobile home to pay for it. And why not go in, instead of going in to somebody's house with maybe 10 or 12 young fellas, going in drinking, because everybody is bored to tears with what is going on. Now, I have told Joe Duffy, if he wants a good woman to run it for him, I'll run it and I won't charge him.
Okay.
How is that, Joe?
You have a minute. You have a minute left. But you're.
I have a minute left.
So you can.
Right? I've been through a lot in the last 2 years.
Okay.
2.5 years, and I'm dying to get a pair of walking shoes to try and get back on my feet. I was almost killed, and I'm trying to get back on my feet, and I cannot get them. I'm not buying anything online because I need to try them on. And as far as I'm concerned, shoes and clothing are essential. Why do they keep calling them non-essential? Liquor is non-essential and boxes of chocolates are non-essential, right? And they have all the shops are open that I know of. I don't know whether I can name them on air, but all the shops I know, they're all non-essential that are open, most okay. of them.
But my understanding, you're 5 seconds over. My understanding is that your main point is you want the mobile home sites reopened.
Let them open up and they're safer than...
They're in the open air. They all have their little decks or their bit of grass in front of them.
And they sit outside in the air. And it's mainly families. They're not strangers.
And the main reason they're not open is that people can't get to them.
People can't get them.
No, can't get to them. They're more than 5K.
They can't get to them. Oh, yeah, because of this 5K,
yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a bloody joke, Joe, if you don't mind me saying it. Is a joke.
And
you know?
So the mobile home sites have effectively been closed for over a year, haven't they?
I know, it's crazy what's going on. It's crazy what's going on.
And you're saying you still pay your annual charge to the mobile home.
Yeah, your annual charge, and if you go down, you don't have gangs. There's no gangs going down.
Okay.
Because they're very particular on... It's my sister has one.
Okay.
And they don't allow gangs in.
Well, every mobile home site is very children-oriented.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
And my sister now goes off on her bicycle down to horses in Wexford, goes down to the sea... on her own, comes back, and she's not infecting anybody or doing anything. But when they're here, the young people, I say, and Michael McDougall was on one of your programmes there. Mm-hmm. Well, he was on RTE, I don't know. And he was saying he was looking at them coming out with, what did he say? Platters or something of liquor.
Slabs,
he was looking
slabs.
At them himself, he said.
Slabs.
Now, wherever he lives, I don't know. And he was looking at them. And all those liquor stores are all opened. I don't know whether I can name them. But they're all opened and they're coming out with big boxes. Not a bottle in their hand, boxes.
Okay, I think on the south side they call them platters of beer.
Platters,
on the
that's
north
what
side,
he said. That's
we
what
call,
he said.
On the north side we call them slabs. Yeah,
yeah slabs.
Okay.
Slabs, that's exactly
slabs
what Michael McDougall
slabs
said.
And platters. Okay.
So I'm not making that up.
I know,
Joe.
I know.
Yep.
But Alan,
yep.
if people go down to their mobile homes,
yep.
In other words, if the 5K is lifted, one, like, you do sit on your deck of an evening.
Yeah.
The kids are safe because there's no cars
exactly.
or whatever. And there's more kids to play with. That's the great thing about it.
Yeah.
And then you see your neighbour who you haven't seen in over a year, Alan.
Exactly.
So you're sitting on your deck, maybe sipping a glass of cold Bovril or warm Prosecco. And you say, Mary, I haven't seen you in a year. How you keep? And then before you know it, there's a full jar of Bovril open. Or a bottle of Prosecco.
To be honest with you, Joe, I don't drink alcohol at all. No, but I don't smoke. I don't drink. And I don't go with men.
That's not business.
Right.
And if you ask me after that, what you say? I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't have sex or whatever.
Yeah,
and
I don't go with men.
Well, and if you ask me the next question, Joe, how long do you think I live? I'd say to you, Ellen, sure, what do you want to live for?
Yeah, well, I live for my dancing, Joe.
Okay,
we go dancing, okay. And we miss it so much. And to me, age is a number. Right.
So you're calling on the government to allow people go to their mobile homes.
Yeah.
And would you say, I'm serious now, would you say to people, if you go to your mobile home site, you should stay there for at least 2 weeks? Do you follow me?
Yes.
You should base yourself there.
Well, even if they make you get a test, why not?
Yeah.
You know, look at what happened there. Where is it now that they opened up all these, you walk in and get a test done?
Five different places.
You know, and they could be after being drinking with maybe a crowd out. The young people drinking.
And Ellen, I'm very conscious that it's over a year, but mobile home and summer holidays, and they're a relatively inexpensive way of having a wonderful, wonderful summer holiday, and people have incredible memories.
Yeah, they're going to have to. And what's annoying me about them is they're not doing what England and Scotland are doing. They're laying out a map. In 4 weeks, they're going to open this up. They're going to open that. They're doing nothing. Because I'll tell you why. They're not running the country.
And next week...
Next
week is the big mobile home week,
Easter,
isn't it? Easter is the big opening time.
Yeah.
And are they still... The mobile home sites still want the money?
They're still collecting the money. My sister has paid now for all this year. She paid last year. I think they gave her back a few bob last year.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just like the management companies. People would probably ring you in now after this about the management companies.
Joe at RT.ie. Stay there, Ellen. Teresa's in Kerry.
Okay.
Teresa, you're worried.
Hi, Joe. Hi, everybody. I love your show as always. Yes, you see, Joe... I live down here in Kerry and a place called Camp and across very near the seaside. I'm very near the beach there in the Tralee Bay, and there's two caravan parks.
Okay, very popular.
Now, I can understand where this lady is coming from, her paying her large fees. Of course I do.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd be flooded with Dublin, Limerick, Cork people, you know, other counties, of course, as well. And Kerry's doing very good at the moment with the virus. And next thing, we'd have a whole pile of it again. Now, actually, there is a lot of Dublin cars around last weekend.
Oh, was there?
In a place called Maharees, and they're suffering there. And there's a, you know, the bay there is great for suffering. But all you can see is Dublin cars there. And long weekends.
They're surfing.
That's
crazy. Surfing in the Maharees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of Dublin cars there. And last weekend, you see the amount of cars that was there.
And when the lockdown... Well, you see, it depends on the time of year as well.
Last weekend, Joe, there was a lot of cars there.
And this weekend, the clocks go forward. We're really into springtime. Brighter mornings. Sorry, brighter days. Longer days.
Yeah.
Slightly darker morning. But...
I'm on the main lower Connor Pass Road here. And you can see the cars going towards Dingle and back west.
And do people, when they see a Dublin Reg, do they bristle?
I don't know, Joe. There's a lot of people, the locals, just give them a bad look,
you know?
Do
they,
They do. But you see, Joe, they're using our small shops, supermarkets, chemist shops. And, you know, even the locals kind of, there was one guy in a supermarket down here, and he goes to the door and he says, like, where you're from? And he's a guy at the door trying to stop people. He does, yeah.
Oh, and if you say I'm down from Dublin, he won't let you in.
No, I'm not saying that. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. God, I'm not saying that at all. But there is people that have been questioned, yes.
Ellen, you'd bring the virus down to Kerry or Wexford.
Well, listen, it's ridiculous. If you do what you're told, wash your hands, keep your mask on, put a double mask on, as Professor Luke O'Neill. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Great man, a double mask, he said. If you have to, it prevents you doubly. And if you see a Dublin car number that you don't want to go near, you keep away from it. Right? Keep away from it. And if you go into the car parks or into the spaces, you know, where the mobiles are, maybe they will have their own rules that you that you have to keep to. Right? Some of them have their own rules. Right?
Of course they do.
Might tell you not to go
well.
Out to stay put. You're down on a holiday down in, you know, but it's ridiculous what's going on. I think it's ridiculous, and I think, I tell you something, I think it's going to keep going up now and up and up.
Well, Kerry, now in fairness, well, Teresa was in Kerry very low.
Kerry
in
low.
COVID, yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's very low, yes.
And I think
that's
Wexford
why we don't want
was
more virus coming in, Joe. Yeah, and I know, I can understand where that lady's coming from.
Yep.
Well, I really
can't. Kerry, but Kerry more so than any other county probably in the country depends on tourists.
We do. Definitely depend
they
on tourism,
on,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
of course we do. Yeah. We depend on everybody coming in and we welcome them.
Where's it going to end?
I don't know. It's frightening. It's absolutely frightening. And it's worse it's getting.
Joe, how long more is this going to go on for another 3 months with them? That they're locking up everybody for another 3 months?
I know, it's very sad.
You know, and then you have the men in particular are going ape, you know, and especially if they're carrying knives and that. It's mental health problems everybody is suffering from now at the moment.
Yeah, but who's
if they had the vaccine and if it was done right.
Okay.
I think when you look at other countries and the way they do the vaccine, we haven't got it to do it. And that's what's wrong, right?
We're all affected with
affected.
The
5K. Yeah, yeah.
Every one of us feel the same way.
Yeah, we're all being locked up and locked up and locked up. It's crazy. It's crazy what's going on.
Tell
them to open the essential stores.
But Teresa,
we have to be safe too. We have to be safe.
We have to be what?
Safe.
Yeah.
This is a deadly virus.
I met a young girl, 22 years of age, that had a baby. And she was waiting to buy a buggy. She has the little child, a month old, zipped up in her coat. And she crying outside mama's and papa's, called non-essential.
Look, I have
it's
a daughter.
It's crazy what's going on.
She can't buy
a
buggy.
I have a daughter working in...
No, she went down to buy a buggy.
Yeah.
And she can't get the buggy because they're closed up. They're all closed up. She obviously didn't want to buy it online. I don't know. All I know is that she was outside with the child zipped up, a little baby, a month old.
So a bottle of Bacardi is essential, but a buggy isn't. A baby's buggy.
Exactly. And shoes and clothing are not essential, yet you can go in and buy, as you said, the word you used, that Michael McDougall used, platters of liquor.
Yeah.
Right? And up where I am, there's a place after opening up, now they do, I won't name it, but they make the handmade chocolates.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep it open, they're all streets ahead of the government, they got in coffee, hot drinks. And now they're opened up.
They're a coffee shop, yeah.
Yeah,
okay, well,
they're opened up.
Takeaway coffee.
And I could name several places that are after pulling fast ones by getting
and
in there.
Ellen, I won't detain you too long, but you were saying about your walking shoes.
Yeah, I need a pair. I'm recovering from a severe accident, right?
Yeah.
I had my two hips replaced. I was mugged in the park.
Oh, for God's sake.
I had my two hips replaced. And my husband had a treble bypass almost 6 months before that. And recovering from all that, we were heading to the hospital on the 29th of January, just before this pandemic started.
Yeah,
not this year, just a year ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And the police were chasing a drug addict on the wrong side of the road he was travelling. And we were stopped. We weren't driving.
Okay.
Crashed into us. And I ended up with a broken collarbone, three broken ribs, punctured lung, lost half of my thumb. And my left hip, they had to clamp the wound and before they stitched it. That's how bad I was. And I'm recovering from that. And I'm very wobbly on my feet at the moment. And I want to get shoes, you know, and I need to try them on, right? There's no point in saying get them online. And they're calling this non-essential.
Okay.
Now, you don't mind me saying this, Joe. I worked for the army and they always used to say men are on a different planet to women.
Yeah.
Right? We're on Earth and men are on Mars. And looking at this government, they're on Mars. They're definitely not listening to what... Okay. And they know me, by the way. Micheál Martin's office now knows me, okay, because I ring them every day. I got one guy's name, Gavin is one of
them.
You were
saying that,
and they're lovely. They are lovely. They just listen. They probably laugh at me. Now, do you know? But
did you tell me you were mugged in the Phoenix Park? And is that when your two hips went?
Yeah, well, I suffer from osteoporosis, you see.
Oh, yeah.
I have osteoporosis, and it didn't help. My two hips were smashed, and the nurses were on strike at that stage. Now, this is the year before that.
Okay.
And they were on strike. They told me I could go in and lie on a trolley, but I'd probably be sent home or pay for... And I had to pay for the left hip, although I have a medical card. And I got the right one done. And the man that did me, I've nothing but the height of praise. Can I name him?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Mr. Cashman. And if he's listening, he was absolutely fantastic. And I got my second hip done in Finglas.
Okay,
I can't remember the name of the second
lease of life. And when the car was being chased in the Phoenix Park?
No, the car, I was coming out of the Phoenix Park after visiting my husband.
Okay.
This was before my hips
were done.
He was
in St. Mary's, okay.
Yeah, St. Mary's. And he tried to get my bag from me. I had it around my shoulder. You know the way women wear the bag.
But what about the car crash you were in?
Oh, the car crash happened on... we were heading for the Mater Hospital, and it happened at Kilshane Cross. And the guy, I won't name now, but he's been in and out 129 times.
Oh, my God.
In and out. And now
did you see him coming? Did you see the car
coming
for you?
I saw him coming, but we couldn't reverse back. We'd have to reverse back. There was, you know, the way trucks behind
I know. And so what you see this car... You knew he was going to crash into you.
I knew he was, and I said it to my husband, and he wasn't quick enough to reverse back. If we had to reverse back, we might have survived the worst of the crash. But it ended up that it was my side got most of it. Thank God it wasn't my
husband. What are you screaming at your husband when you see this car coming towards
you? I just kept screaming, there's a lunatic coming on our side of the road. Don't drive if the lights turn green. Don't drive. We were stopped. And and who suffered everything? We did. Even when we went to get the car, we lost 10 grand on the car, and it was only a fairly new car, But I mean, at least we're alive.
And
like,
when
were you
knocked unconscious, or did you?
I was knocked unconscious. We were both taken by two different ambulances to Blanchardstown Hospital. Right, and they must have known about this thing coming, because I was thrown out. He was thrown out after 3 days, and I was thrown out after 4 days. Right, and then of course they tried to get me into a nursing home, and I won't name the nursing home, but I signed myself out after a fortnight. They were suffered from Alzheimer's, a lot of the people, and they were coming into my room at night and that, like, you know.
But you're totally compass man.
Yeah.
What you've had are accidents. You haven't had a stroke or you haven't lost any.
No, but a lot of injuries, an awful lot, and I'm still trying to recover a year on. Now, do you know?
Yeah.
And as I say, the man that did my hips, they were fantastic now. Absolutely fantastic.
Okay. So,
now, do you know, I got one done in the Mater private. We were heading, you see, with my husband and myself to the Mater because he was getting checked out. He had a treble bypass. Now, do you know?
Okay. John Keogh, you heard Ellen's speech there, 3 minutes. She said, open the mobile home sites. allow us go to the mobile home sites. We're out in the open air. The children are playing. It's not just a bit of a break, reasonably priced. It's also for our mental health, John.
Okay, Joe. Well, firstly, Joe, I never thought I'd be back on to talk to you so soon after the conversation we had less than 5 weeks ago. And I'd like to say to that lady, I'm sorry you have so many troubles, and I really don't mean you any ill will. I hope you're the best in life. But I'd love you to say to me, I would give anything in the world right now to have my 53-year-old sister sit beside me now, who died from COVID-19 only 6 weeks ago. What would you say to me if I had my sister right here now? What would you say? The importance of going to a Wexford caravan or wherever it might be to get some headspace to replacing my sister. What would you say to me right now to justify going to a caravan?
Well, I don't know what to say to you because I don't know how your sister, she obviously picked it up somewhere, the virus. And I myself, especially since my accident and since everything that happened to me, I am wearing double masks. I don't, if anyone comes to talk to me, I make them move back and I do everything I'm told. I wash my hands, I do everything I'm told. I don't know what the circumstances of your sister is, so I cannot answer that.
I don't know how she picked it up.
It's Ellen, John.
Yeah.
Ellen, aren't you blessed that you're still alive?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah. But
can I just speak,
yeah,
please?
Yeah.
There's over 3,300 families affected the same way I am. And you are so blessed that you're alive. And I wish my sister would have trouble with her feet that she couldn't get shoes. And obviously the government message is not getting out to people. The language is not the right language. But I'm telling you here and now, COVID kills, and it doesn't matter whether you're sitting in a caravan or in your own home. Mm. It kills. And the government guidelines, I agree with government totally, 100%, that these lockdowns are to save lives. It didn't help my sister because she was a healthcare professional. And I would give anything in the world for my sister to be suffering with her feet or to have some afflictions that you have, because at least she would be alive.
John, I'm sorry. And I had an uncle-in-law that died of it. He was great health in his late 80s, and he picked it up from somebody that had came in from outside the county as well.
Yeah. So, but what I would say to people like yourself, and as I said, I don't mean anybody ill will in the world. Yeah. I think people are fantastic. We're all suffering from lockdown fatigue, every single one of us.
Is that not the problem, John, that it is
it
on
is.
The brink?
But
the,
I
weather,
think people,
the weather is picking up.
It is. People should just take a deep breath and just think of the 3,500 people who are in my position. There's people being buried today that died from COVID.
No,
there's going to be people buried tomorrow who died from COVID. Just take a deep breath and think about what you're saying.
Claire, your point, please, and then I'll come back to John and others. Claire, your point, please.
Hi, Joe.
Yeah.
Well, I've had recurrent toe infections since last December. I now have lost 4 toenails. 3 of those toenails have actually fallen off for the third time.
Yeah. Why? What's...
And it's because I'm now forced to do road walking because there's nowhere else, like there's no forestry or anything within my 5 kilometres.
Yeah.
So I literally have no choice but to go on the road. But now I actually need to go and buy a pair of runners, maybe, I don't know, whether a half size bigger, a size bigger.
Yeah.
So I can't buy them online because, I mean, I'm actually going to go. There, I know a shop that is open and I am actually going to go tomorrow or Saturday because I've no choice. You know, that the last couple of walks, I come back with an inflamed, infected toenail. So I don't want to go to the shop. I will wear 2 masks. I will be in and out within literally as quick as I can. I haven't actually...
And runners and sports are gear not regarded as essential.
That's correct, yes.
But then, if walking is so bad for you, Claire, would you... And I know every question has a back to it, but if walking is so bad for you, then don't go walking. Which is a terrible thing to say, isn't it?
Well, no, it's only because I obviously need a new pair, a runner that's in a slight size bigger.
Yeah.
I'm very active, so walking. I normally hike, you see. I normally hike. So
and you can't walk in Birks or whatever, which are very popular among a certain set. You know, the open, where your toes are free, so to speak.
I've had a stress fracture in the past, so I have to wear a specific, you know, type of runners.
Yeah. We forget how many shops are closed, especially as a lot of people are shopping online and they're just bypassing shops. But we forget for a lot of people, especially where you have to get proper measurements and that, the shops are really important. Okay, Teresa, John, Coe and Claire. Ellen, did you ring the Taoiseach's office today to talk to Micheál?
Yeah, I spoke to them this morning again.
And did you ever, and do you say, can I talk to Micheál?
Yeah, well, they don't let you talk to Micheál. So I guess sometimes I got fed up with the men and I asked for a woman and they put a lady on to me.
Okay.
Because I don't think he's getting the messages, I said, right? And I, that man, what he said, like, about his sister.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm talking about this in a different way. Why not close all the places, the booze places that they have opened, that they won't be drinking them.
Okay,
they won't be able to get the booze.
But,
why call the essential shops non-essential? Yeah,
remember, for every bottle of Jameson that they sell in whatever sell them, the government gets 17 quid.
Oh, yeah. It's all to do with money, isn't it? Tax.
Yeah, well, we
the
need,
tax.
Yeah.
They're getting the tax back on the liquor. That's what it's all about.
Do you say, Ellen, to Micheál's office, I'm going to ring again on Monday?
I don't say. What I say is I ring up and I say, it's me again. And one of them laughed at me. Now, I got the name of one of them. Of them was Gavin. I didn't get
you
the
liked
name.
Him, but you liked he, him. You liked him.
Anyone that listens to me.
Yeah,
but they're not listening. My point is that why call shoe shops places like that non-essential?
But you're saying open up the mobile home site. Siobhan,
yeah.
You had a mobile for 17 years. Are you for or against Ellen?
I was just saying there that I just feel that there's no reason that we couldn't go down to the mobile because we wouldn't be mixing any more down there than we would that people do up here. We stay in our mobile, we don't go out. So I don't understand it, to be honest with you. That's all.
Do you think if the government said you can go to your holiday home or your mobile home, won't you promise to stay there for a few weeks and not go in?
Yeah, why not?
I know that we're very... good at that kind of thing, so we're not mixing up here. So I just feel if people got an opportunity to go down, that's all.
Okay, Siobhan, going to meet Amaga, John Coe again, condolences, and Ellen Armstrong.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, bye bye.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay.
5151 my chance.
Bye bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Another one of the Nelson Pillar Six, apparently, was Joe Pilkington. Now, people who remember the Reardons, and indeed he was in a lot of movies as well, he played Eamon Marr in the movies. And now, unfortunately, he died very young. He died in 1999. Apparently, he was one of the six with the head of Nelson, that the photographer that we believe Martin Lyons is in. And if you don't know Joe Pilkington, you definitely know his daughter, who's another brilliant actress. And that's Rachel Pilkington, and she's in Fair City, Jane, isn't she, in Fair City? Great, for 8 or 9 years. Brilliant, brilliant actress. And so we're following a definite line of inquiry about Martin at this stage. And hopefully we'll be able to get those incredibly important documents and photographs and obviously one off they are to back to his family. Let's go to the Suez Canal and what's happening. Gabriel Gregan, am I correct? Yes.
Yes, Joe.
Gabriel.
Go ahead.
Why has the world stopped because a ship got stuck in the Suez Canal? Is it that difficult to navigate? It's straight. There's no locks, is there?
No locks, as they say, unlike Panama.
Okay, so you've been through it.
Yes, I have just made a tot up here. 7 times between 1976 and 1992. 1976, just after when it reopened.
Okay, and how long does it take? Were you on the bridge?
Well, I wasn't in a...
I have to get a better line. Get a better line. You sound like you're in Suez. Fine. Stay there, Gabe. We'll get about Desmond Wisely. Desmond Wisely. I got that incorrect there. You say you regularly sailed the Suez Canal from the Gulf. Okay. What is the big challenge in the Suez Canal that this ship has crashed?
I sailed just through it once, Joe, back in the year 2000.
Okay.
On a VLCC, a very large crude carrier,
okay.
and we sail through it at night time.
All right.
And then you go through on convoy. You go through about 4 or 5 ships at a time.
Oh, do you? Okay.
There's a northbound convoy and a southbound convoy, okay. And then you meet in the middle then until the other convoy passes you out. If you know what I mean.
Oh, it's like a railway junction in the middle.
Well, there's a kind of a lake. There's a lake there in the middle.
So they come one side of you. You go one side, port, starboard, or whatever. Down,
yeah, yeah.
And then you get into the lane. They've just vacated, and they get into the lane. You've just vacated.
You just pass them by in the lake, and you also have to have a Suez light, special light on the front of the ship, big massive Suez light. On the front of the ship.
A Suez light, and what's the difference? What does that function
like? It's regulations. You have to have a Suez light going through at night time.
Okay.
It sounds like it's unusual because it's like having a big headlight on the bow of a ship.
Okay. Now, is it, surely it's a canal with no locks. It's fairly straight, obviously. Surely it's not that difficult to navigate.
Well, the ship that was stuck there is called the Ever, what's it called again?
The Evergreen, is there?
Well, Evergreen or the Everstuck.
Evergiven, apparently.
Everstuck.
Everstuck, yeah.
But she got very high sides in her jaw, so they reckon there was a sandstorm that blew it off to one side, blew it off, off course.
Well, how come? But the thing is, how come it's never happened before? The canal operates 24/7, 365. It brings in nearly 6 billion every year in revenue, because you pay to go through it, in revenue to the Egyptian government, and then... One ship brings 12% of the world's traffic, and it's compounded now by the day.
Well, it's obviously a piloted error on the pilots. That's what I reckon it is. But Joe, just to say, it's also called the Marlborough Canal.
Okay, why is that?
Because I remember, like, on 20 years ago when I was on it. First of all, everything had to be locked in the ship. Everything on the Egyptian side. The customs come on board, the pilot come on board, the Suez Canal supervisor comes on board, and a whole entourage of about 30 people come on board. Mm-hmm. And the first place they head for is up to the captain's when they're at anchor, up to the captain's cabin, and they all get two or three cartons of Marlboro.
With the cigarettes. Yeah.
Cigarettes, because if you don't give over them, Joe.
Wow.
The next time you go to that canal, there'll be lots of delays.
And is it well run? Is the canal efficient and well run?
Oh, it's efficient, all right. But it's inefficient in that way. If you give over two or three cartons, all of these entourage every time to go through, you know, it kind of stinks a wee bit, if you know what I mean. Because if you don't get them over, you will be delayed, and with shipping. With shipping, time is money, so you have to give up
absolutely.
A cigarette.
And given how important the artery is in the world, as we're discovering, it's just unbelievable.
That ship is also, you know, the way it's stuck there, it's stuck on the sand on both sides. So it's like if you get a welly caught in a muddy ground. It's actually stuck now. It's actually stuck. So the only way of getting it out is actually by either pumping water down to loosen all the sand around it,
mm-hmm.
or actually dredging the sand around it now, because all the sand would blow in, and even though it's dredged quite often, all the sand would blow in from the desert and be on either side of the canal. Because when you go through the canal, every ship churns up all the sand behind you.
Okay, about 30 seconds. Gabriel Gregan, in your journeys through the Suez Canal, is it well run or is it corrupt?
Well, that's what I thought. The actual navigation of it itself, I think, was second to none. I think when Nasser first nationalised it in 1965, everyone was saying they'd be, 1956, I should say, everyone was saying they'd be screaming at Europeans to come back and run it. And to their credit, they ran the transit operation.
I remember,
the
Suez Crisis, it caused a major war in the 50s. Pat Murphy's a well-known circumnavigator. You went through the Suez Canal as well, Pat. Have you one minute of stories about the Suez Canal, please?
Yes, Joe, when we went into the Suez Canal, we thought we'd never get out of it. It was like in an open prison. Everywhere we went, we looked for backhanders and everything else on it. And the pilots were unbelievable. We had two pilots, one from Suez up to Ismailia, and then one from Ismailia up to the exit to the top. And they kept looking for more and more from us. It was terrible.
What do you mean, more and more money, cigarettes, drink?
More money. more and more money, and we give them all sorts of things. We were arguing with them all the time on
Okay.
And even in the ports, they were always looking for backhanders.
Well,
but I must say, we enjoyed it. But when I got out at the end, back into the Med, we had a celebration. And that's been honest with you.
Okay, never again. Okay, good to meet them all, good.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
There's a hunt for the Merrion Square residence. Number 12, where Violet Gibson lived. Any relatives of Violet Gibson. Number 82, where Martin Lyons lived, Merrion Square. Any relatives we're looking for. Fergus Sweeney produced. Tommy O'Sullivan on sound. Neve Dunn is the researcher. Maeve Mooney, the BCO. And Rebecca Meehan is the series producer. And Ray Darcy is next.